Hey guys, if you like the show and you want to show your support, check out the Opperman Report Patreon. You can go there and become a member for $3 a month. We have all the shows that you hear Monday through Friday on AMFM radio. We have all those shows, but we cut out the ads. So you can hear that content ad-free. There's a $5 section where we put up all the old member section shows are going up over there. And then there's a $10 section where we have brand new content. 8 hours of exclusive content per month goes up there in the $10 section. But listen, I put up a lot of free stuff too. We put up documents, court documents, photographs, announcements. So you should make the Opperman Report Patreon a stop. You should stop there once a day and check out what's going on over there. That's Opperman Report Patreon.
A flooded home or business is never easy to deal with. You're left with a mess to clean up, having to deal with the insurance company to pay for the damages, not to mention the memories that are lost that you cannot replace. An Aquadam can be another tool in your arsenal to protect your home or business from the floodwaters, a hurricane storm surge, or the king tides. Give Aquadam a call at 707-764-2119 or look us up online at aquadam.net. We can help. We're also offering 10% off the price to anyone who mentions they heard this ad on the Opperman Report.
Before Epstein was the Franklin cover-up, before that, the Finders, and long before that, the Cleveland Street Scandal. Pedogate Primer is a concise intro and overview of a growing child abuse epidemic worldwide. It features shocking instances of institutionalized and organizational pedophilia throughout history. Churches, cults, the world of arts and entertainment, the government, NGOs, charities, and major corporations are all complicit or culprits in many instances. Pedogate Primer delves into material that for many may seem like the stuff of conspiracy theories. For this reason, the book draws on academic resources, declassified documents, and other reliable sources, and steers clear of conjecture. Such shocking true stories need no embellishment.
EmailRevealer.com. People ask me all the time, "Hey Ed, are you still a private investigator?" I sure am. Go to EmailRevealer.com. We handle adoption investigations, infidelity investigations, where you give us your spouse's email address. We trace it back to online dating websites, catch them cheating online. Email tracing, locate or identify somebody from as little as an anonymous email address. Someone owe you money? Back child support? We can find that deadbeat. Locate his hidden assets. Locate his hidden bank accounts. Find his current place of employment and even assist you in obtaining a judgment and recover that judgment for you. EmailRevealer.com, digital forensics, computer forensics, cell phone forensics, recover deleted text messages, create a report that you can use in court. EmailRevealer.com, 800-572-9762. If you find yourself in need of legal representation, it can be a very stressful time in your life. In my career, I have dealt with thousands of lawyers, I've dealt with thousands of law firms, and I can confidently recommend to you Keith M. Davidson at kmdlaw.com. Available 24 hours, 7 days a week. Just log into kmdlaw.com. That's kmdlaw.com. Or you can call toll-free 833-4-KMD-LAW. That's 833-4-KMD-LAW. Personal injury, wrongful death, STDs, sexual assault, car accidents. They handle it all efficiently and professionally. It doesn't matter how imposing the opposition may be, because the team at kmdlaw.com are battle-tested and fierce. They will not stop until justice prevails. Go to kmdlaw.com or call toll-free 833-4-KMD-LAW. If you're in for the fight of your life, stop screwing around and contact KMD-LAW.
It's the Opperman Report. Join digital forensic investigator and PI Ed Opperman for an in-depth discussion of conspiracy theories, strategy of New World Order resistance, high-profile court cases in the news, and interviews with expert guests and authors on these topics and more. It's the Opperman Report. And now, here is investigator Ed Opperman.
Okay, welcome to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, Private Investigator Ed Opperman. You can find me at Opperman Investigations and Digital Forensic Consulting at my website, emailrevealer.com. You can just email me directly at oppermaninvestigations@gmail.com. If you like our show, be sure and check out our Patreon. I put up about 8 hours of new content on Patreon each month. And all the shows that you hear over here on Monday to Friday on AM/FM radio, we cut out the ads. You can get them over there at Patreon. Ad-free. I know a lot of people like to complain about the commercials, so it's one way to get the show without the commercials. Our archives are always free. You go to Spreaker.com or Apple Plays. That's a good place to go to, too. And all the archives are up there, all the old shows. I've done many, many shows on Columbine, but never before with someone so directly involved as our guest today, Mr. Randy Brown, who's the father of Brooks Brown. He's the author of the book called... Inside Story of Columbine, Lies, Cover-ups, Ballistics, Lessons. And his main focus is in trying to prevent this from happening in the future and to do something, draw attention to school bullying and how this creates a circumstance with the child being bullied where they have no other resources, no other alternative to fight back against these bullies but go to these extreme measures. Mr. Randy Brown, are you there?
Yes, Ed. Is it okay if I call you Ed?
Sure.
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
Very good, very good. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself? Who is Randy Brown?
I'm a nobody. I was forced into the Columbine situation because one of the killers, Eric Harris, threatened my son prior to the actual tragedy a year and 2 years before. Threatened to kill him, and then we got a hold of Eric's web pages, Eric Harris, where he had information about how he was building and detonating pipe bombs and where he threatened to kill my son again, and so we turned that over to the police, and this was a year and 2 years before Columbine actually happened. We actually went to the police. It's quite confusing, 13 or 17 times. It's difficult to ascertain. Depends on what you call going to the police each time. And nothing was done. And then the police, after Columbine, lied about it, said we hadn't gone to the police. We came up with a case number. They had to admit that. Then they lied about my son and lied about our involvement. And after 2 years of research and fighting them, 60 Minutes got involved and exposed the search warrant for Eric's house that was a result of our complaint that was never served. And then even worse, 5 years after that, the Attorney General of Colorado did an investigation that ended up with proving without question that 15 or 16 members of the Jefferson County government had met the day after Columbine and conspired to conceal information from the families of the murdered children. And that, during that time period, I journaled and wrote down everything that happened, the things we found, the things we uncovered, the Freedom of Information Act requests we did, hours and hours and hours of research, and that's what the book is. The book is a kind of a summary of that and my story on how sad this all was and how tragic this all was. And that was just my journals. And then decided at the end of that what mattered was how to stop this. And we had pretty much understood how to stop this, and that was what we had worked on. So that's the last third of the book, is how to stop school shootings and what we learned from this tragedy. And that's the reason I published the book.
Well, why don't we start with this? What caused Eric to begin threatening your son?
Oh, my gosh. Eric was an injustice collector. Mm. You would do something wrong to Eric, and he would hate you forever. That was just the end of it. So Brooks was the toughest kid to wake up in the morning ever, especially in high school. He was always late for school, even though he was driving and had a car. He just could not get up for work. Well, he was picking up Eric and taking him to school for a while. And he didn't pick up Eric, and Eric got upset. Well, then Eric was mad at Brooks, and that was it. Eric hated him from that point on. That's Eric. Eric was angry and an injustice collector and would never forgive you. So that's what started it.
And it became so bad you had to go to the police. When you went to the police, did they ever make contact with Eric and his parents and on your behalf?
Ed, there's so many questions here. That's a perfect question, because the truth is we don't know. The Harrises have never talked. The Klebolds have never talked. The police have never released that information. We know that one Deputy Walsh did go up to the neighborhood, interview the neighbors, but did he go to the Harrises? Because those reports have never been released. We don't actually know. We do know that one deputy, along with a sergeant and other people, were preparing a search warrant for Eric's house, and that was squashed, and we don't know why that was squashed. So because they have never told the truth about the situation, despite being totally exposed by the Attorney General of Colorado in his investigation, they still have never told the truth, and there are still some unanswered questions. It's kind of fascinating.
And you say that they actually obtained a search warrant based on your complaints?
Yes.
Fascinating.
Exactly. When we went to the police the second time, the first time they had lost our file, the second time we went to the police, a detective was brought out a file that showed that Eric and Dylan had broken into a van and had gotten.
Right.
We didn't know that. It was just a criminal file that he had on them. And the detective, because of our complaint and the pipe bombs that we said Eric was detonating, which he said in his web pages, brought in the bomb squad, who showed us what pipe bombs looked like, and it was on a little display board what the pipe bombs looked like. And so we went home and looked for those around our house, and we did that diligently for a year or so. Eric and Dylan got in trouble at school, so we thought it was from our report, and it turns out it was for the van break-in, which we didn't know about. So comedy of errors there, sort of in a sad way. So, yes.
What about the parents, Eric's parents? Did you ever try and contact them and say, hey, we got to do something here?
Well, that's even more complicated. Mr. and Mrs. Harris, who we had complained to about Eric before, have never spoken, not to us, not to anybody. And the Klebolds, we were good friends with. So we had very good friends with. We went up to their house before and during and after the killings at Columbine. For a long time, and talked with them and sat around their patio pool area. And it sounds all fancy, but it was a pool filled with murky red water because they lived in the Red Rocks area, and the sediment would collect in the pool. And they didn't have enough water to fill the pool. It was kind of sad. You know, it's not this elegant environment that it paints. And we talked about Dylan for hours and hours and hours, taking long walks with them and their neighbors and discussing it with them. And they never told us. Their story at the time was that they did not know anything about how dangerous Eric was. So very complicated.
But aren't there stories about that they had seen, you know, shotguns being sawed off and the smell of gasoline in these houses and things like that?
Not in any testimony. After the fact, there were comments like that from the neighbors and so on, but the Harrises have never said a thing. They've never, other than in the depositions, which are sealed by a federal judge from the lawsuits against them, the Harrises have never spoken. And none of this bomb-making or napalm-making, which they did, happened at the Klebold's house, so the Klebolds wouldn't have smelled those things.
Gotcha.
Only after Columbine did Tom say he found a sawed-off shotgun barrel in Dylan's room. That's the only incident we have of at least that I can remember being aware of that. So that's in a blank book. There is no information to get from the Harrises or Klebolds, really.
Okay, but now the day of the shooting, right? I'm sure, and your son, by the way, is the one that he was walking in. And who told him not to go inside the school? Was it Eric or Dylan?
Actually, Brooks was going out. Brooks was a smoker. And at Columbine, you had to be given permission by the parents, this is weird, to smoke in the smoker's pit. They had an on-school smoker's pit where the kids could smoke, even though it was illegal for them to smoke. They had a place they could. And Brooks, we would never give Brooks permission for that. So he was leaving after whatever hour it was to walk out onto the street to have a cigarette. As long as he was off school property, it was fine. Not with us, but with the school. So he saw Eric drive in and park in a space that wasn't Eric's space. And it was a little odd. So Brooks went down and said something to the effect of, Eric, what are you doing? You missed a class today. And I think it was psychology. I can't remember now. And that's most of your grade. What the hell are you doing? And cussed him out. And Eric looked at him and said, Brooks, it doesn't matter now. Get out of here. I like you.
Huh.
So they had made up in class a month or two before, and Eric didn't hate him. I think Eric saw that he was bullied and humiliated just like Eric was, and maybe changed his opinion. It's very hard to know. There's also a theory that if Eric had killed Brooks in the parking lot, Eric's plan was over, and so that was something he couldn't do. So Brooks continued out to the street, thinking this was a little weird, and lit up his cigarette, and then a couple minutes later heard the shooting. And this is you will hear this many times from people. They go, I thought it was construction. I thought it was nail guns and people hammering. And when there's a school shooting or a shooting like the one in Vegas, you'll hear people go, I thought it was construction, or it's weird, because they're just not initially accepting of the fact that there's gunfire. And then Brooks heard an explosion and knew that, well, that was certainly not hammering. And Brooks was a little panicked, and he ran up the street looking for cars and stopped cars, saying, you know, I think there's a shooting at the school. I think there's an explosion at the school. Don't go back there. And then he called me, and I answered the phone and drove over to get him. So that was that morning. While all this was going on, Aaron, my youngest son, was in the cafeteria two or three tables away from the bombs that Eric and Dylan had planted there. So he did escape, and those bombs did not detonate. So we were very lucky this day.
Yeah, that's another thing. There were several pounds of explosive devices that were brought into that school. How were they able to bring all this material into the school without being seen?
Geez, you have great questions. This is interesting. That is another very interesting problem. There is a video of them carrying what looks like two backpacks into the school that was missed by the police. Someone found it a few years later. However, they're walking normally, and this is going to sound odd, but Judy and I investigated this to every degree we could. We filled a duffel bag with a full propane tank and 2 gallons of gasoline and some other things, which is what was in these duffel bags that they carried in. And I'm 6'3", 240, and it was all I could do to get it off the ground. A full propane tank is heavy.
Sure.
I could not have walked from where they parked, or where we think they parked, to the school and carried this. It was just too heavy. So yet that's what the video shows. So I'm actually, as much as Judy and I investigated this, Judy's my wife, we're not sure how this was done. It looks like it might have been from this video, though I don't know how 140 or 150-pound Dylan Klebold and 140-pound, 135-pound Eric Harris could possibly have carried a duffel bag that weighed that much, 200 yards, and left it in the cafeteria. I don't know how they could have done that.
What about the possibility of others being involved?
Yes, it was a big question, but no one in the school saw someone bringing out propane tanks or duffel bags into the school and leaving them in the cafeteria. So did they leave them there during prom, which was a few days before, and the prom party? Did they carry them in then because Eric and Dylan had keys to the school that they essentially stole from one of the teachers? And did they leave them there then? But there's no evidence of that. How could those things be missed for so long? There are definitely still some unanswered questions. And since Eric and Dylan are dead, and there apparently are no other witnesses to this, some may remain unanswered. we often thought that some other kid helped carry the bombs down there, not knowing what they were, but no one of their friends was in a place to do that after tracking it, very detailed tracking and figuring out where they were. So, yes, you've hit on another one of the great questions.
And what about, you hear these stories of witnesses thought that they saw shooters on the roof?
Oh, okay, yeah, now that's actually an easy one. That's
okay.
There was a guy, he was a heating and air conditioning repairman on the roof at the time. The poor guy, what timing.
Yeah.
Fixing and working on one of the air conditioning units, and the stuff about a shooter on the roof, they kids would turn, and the eyewitness testimony is just so typical of eyewitness testimony in something like this. It's all over the place. Some people said there are two shooters, some said there's three, some said there's a guy on the roof, all kinds of things like that. Well, someone would turn around and someone was shooting at them, and there's a guy on the roof and a kid on the ground, but they don't know who it is shooting at them. So they just think, well, there's a guy on the roof and a guy on the ground shooting at them, and that's what's passed along to the police in their report. There was no one on the roof shooting at them. That was a furnace repair guy, and he was identified and interviewed, and that was all cleared up. But once a myth like that starts, it never stops. The other thing on that, the interesting detail, they said there were two shooters or three shooters. Well, Eric took off his black trench coat outside the school and laid it on the ground after they had started shooting. So they were shooting, people saw him, it's two kids in black trench coats. The kid turns back and sees him, a kid in a white shirt, and then another kid in a trench coat. Well, that's three people. It's not, it's two people, one who has taken his coat off. So that's the confusion there. And that's what was, I know this sounds awful, but that's what was fascinating about investigating this, is after you read, 700 reports, 90,000 pages of documents, and listen to the 9/11 tapes and other tapes and see other photos and read the CBI and the FBI reports and the El Paso report, you begin to understand things that are a little unclear if someone has only read 10,000 or 3,000 pages. I mean, the 90,000 pages that Judy and I researched and read a number of times answer a lot of the questions if you just keep looking. So that's why it was only two shooters, because, well, and also there's no evidence of any kind, fingerprints, anything, that anyone else had a weapon or a gun or was shooting or whatever. So
right, you've looked into the ballistics quite a bit, because you're convinced that it was a murder suicide and it wasn't a double suicide.
Well, that's a dark subject and it's kind of sad to talk about, but it's to me absurdly obvious. The crime scene photos show Dylan Klebold laying on his side with the weapon in his right hand. His hand is gripped around the grip of the Tech 9, which is around a 10-inch projection from the front of his hand, if you can imagine. It's not a little pistol. It's a long Tech 9, not a rifle, but it's a long pistol. And the gun is gripped in his right hand, yet the entry wound and the exit wound, the entry wound is in his left temple and the exit wound is in his right temple. That's physically impossible to do. I know that, please, nobody try to do that, but hold up a pencil and just imagine it's 10 inches from your head and you have to shoot yourself with a pencil in your right hand in the left temple and have it exit the right temple. You cannot physically get your hand in that position. So also, there was no magazine in the weapon, and there was a bullet in the Tech 9 in the chamber, which means it hadn't been fired, at least since the time it was fired before that. So the suicide bullet couldn't have come from that. So there's only one other person in the room with a 9mm weapon, and it's Eric. So the conclusion is pretty simple, is that Eric killed Dylan. Dylan fell on his side with the weapon still in his right hand, and then Eric sat down and killed himself with his shotgun. So, well, that's a little dark. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. But now, is the official police story, though, that it was that they both committed suicide?
That has changed. Initially, it was unclear. The coroner did call it a suicide, and it's an amateur coroner, by the way, not a professional. And then there was talk from the police and others who had seen the crime scene that it was a murder-suicide. But the Klebolds were filing a lawsuit against the sheriff's department, too, claiming that the sheriff should have notified them and stopped Eric. And that if Eric had killed Dylan, that would have strengthened their lawsuit. So then they changed it to a suicide to weaken the Klebolds lawsuit, and then the Klebolds dropped that lawsuit. Again, what a complicated situation.
Now, the night of that shooting, or the next day, the media descends upon Columbine, the city, and they want to talk to everybody in town, anybody who has any kind of connection to this, especially your family and your son. Did you start screaming from the roof, "Hey, we called the police 17 times?
Actually, in the beginning, it's kind of funny. Not funny. It's
odd.
Odd, yes. In the beginning, we just said we were trying to figure out what happened, and we said Brooks called one of the local TV stations and said, "Hey, we reported him to the police, and what's going on here?" The police denied that. They said, I'm sorry, the phone ticked there.
That's okay.
The police denied that, said we had never filed a report, that we were making it up. In the beginning, we weren't accusing anyone of anything. We were just trying to find out what happened. We said, no, we reported him, and here's when we reported him, and what for. He broke the windshield of my son's car, and they shot out a window in our garage with a paintball gun, and he was threatening our son to kill him and building and detonating pipe bombs. And you just need to find your file. Well, they couldn't find the file I can't remember, was it 2 weeks maybe? And then I looked in my old daytimer. Remember when they used to have paper daytimers?
I do remember, yeah.
I love those things. Yeah. And I had written down the police report from 1998, the number of it, and once we came up with that, it was like, oh, that's right, that report, the police agreed that we had reported them. So it just started out with Jefferson County covering up everything they could, thinking that we didn't have a police report. Like, we knew the detective's name, we knew the bomb squad guy's names who we had met with. What, did they think we were making it up? We know the room they took us to. But that's how desperate they were to cover up their failure.
No. Would you think that was the extent of it, that they were just embarrassed by that? Because wasn't there some, like, the other members of the Trenchcoat Mafia had family members that were FBI agents or in the sheriff's department?
Actually, not that I'm aware of. No, I don't think there were any connections like that. I think that Jefferson County knew at the time. Now, you have to think of this in the month or less after the Columbine murders. People were in disbelief, but if they had found out immediately that these kids had been reported to the sheriff and the sheriff hadn't done anything, people would have been angry. And the best way to postpone that anger is to delay it. So you put it off for 2 months or 6 months or 2 years or 5 years, and now people aren't as mad. It's, that was 5 years ago, who cares? And that's essentially what happened. It was a perfect strategy for Jefferson County. Lie to the families, lie about us, lie to the families of the murdered children, and later on when it comes out, people will go, well, that's just disappointing, and they won't be angry. If this had come out immediately, wow. The cover-up by Jefferson County is phenomenal. I can jump ahead to
one. That was going to be my next question. Yes, you said the next day there was a meeting where they. Okay, let's hear this.
Okay, you are organized, and actually, this is fascinating. You know way more than I expected on this. Very, very good background work for you. Yes,
thank you.
Now, it's unclear when there were secret meetings held by Jefferson County, and it's unclear exactly when they started. We initially thought it was the day of Columbine. It turns out it was the second day of Columbine, the day after Columbine. 15 members of Jefferson County held a secret meeting in the open space building. They didn't have it at the sheriff's department, at the DA's office, or in any of the conference rooms they have. They went in separate vehicles and entered in separate doors on an oval-shaped building so that no one can see them go in the separate doors together, and had a meeting, which they kept secret for 5 years. At this meeting, they decided that they were going to conceal information. They were going to hide the search warrant, because the search warrant was so damning to them that if that got out, people would say, you had a search warrant? Are you kidding me? And you didn't do anything about these kids? They hid that, and they hid other stuff. Now, here's what's sad. We know they hid the search warrant, but we don't know what else they hid. There were five attorneys, a member of county commissioners there, policemen, the sheriff, the undersheriff, the sheriff's attorney. There were 15 people that went to this meeting and agreed, including the district attorney, Dave Thomas, to conceal information from the families of the murdered children. And that lie, that continued, and that concealment continued until, because of Brian Rohrbaugh and the families and Judy and I finding out things, the attorney general was, I don't want to say forced, but decided, agreed to do his own investigation, and he uncovered that secret meeting. And that happened 5 years later, that the meeting where they decided to conceal information was exposed. The two investigators for the Attorney General's office, Mike and Mike, those are just incredible investigators, interviewed us, interviewed 50 people, and they finally interviewed one policeman, and they went to him and said, look, this is the third time we've interviewed you. You have to tell us the truth now, because we know stuff. And if you don't tell us the truth, we're going to have to arrest you. And he broke down and cried, and he told them the truth, that there were secret meetings. Now, the first one was the day after Columbine. And then there were more at Detective Kickbush's house in the mountains that were held, that were never even investigated. Now, what's odd about that, and I appreciate Ken Salazar, the Attorney General, doing that research. It was amazing that he had the courage to do that, because nobody else would. And certainly Jeffco did not want him to. He had the courage to do that investigation. That was amazing. But nothing else was found out other than that. We found out that there were secret meetings, and they decided to conceal the information. But nothing happened to the people involved. Nothing.
Have you suffered any repercussions from going forward, going public about your information?
You know, I was a real estate broker. I'm retired now, so it certainly cost me business, let alone the thousands and thousands of hours I spent investigating it. It cost me time, which cost me business, but that doesn't matter. Lives matter more than money. And actually, no. I mean, our family was hated in the beginning because people thought we were lying and pretending to be part of this, and we were called like media whores, and that we were trying for our 15 minutes of fame, you know, like ridiculous. And people said my son was involved, and then even after all this time, people still think that. It's just crazy, even though there's not a bit of evidence proving that. Actually, it's the opposite. Brooks's name and my name are the two names on the police report turning Eric Harris into the police before Columbine. So if Brooks was involved, why would he be involved in that? And second, his brother was in the cafeteria, for heaven's sake. He would never have allowed bombs and shootings with his brother in the cafeteria. That's just ridiculous. So, and there's not one single bit of evidence showing that he was involved. People still believe it because they just don't want to change their mind. They get this mindset. I think it's called confirmational bias. They get this mindset that, oh, this kid had something to do with it, and that's all they can think. Crazy.
Wait, just like you said about the repairman on the roof, you know, the story gets out there, you hear it, and you say, well, wasn't there something about the boy who was warned, you know, and he was ran away? You know, so people repeat these things. Now, what about what about PTSD? Now, this is a huge trauma in your life, Brooks, the younger brother, your wife. What about the trauma this has caused you? You need any help for that?
Not really. My son, my youngest son, has worked that out. My oldest son still has problems with it. My wife has devoted her time to art projects and things that are positive. After we stopped, she stopped investigating after 10 years. It was all she could do. I understand that. And I have not. I have talked to friends about it, but I have a different perspective on it. I think you, figuratively, you stand in the rain. Stand in the rain. You accept that you were a part of this. You allow yourself to feel the pain, and you fight to make it better.
And we're going to take a commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about bullying in school and how these how we can prevent these things from happening in the future, which seems to be another outlet for you to work through this. We're talking today Randy Brown, and he's written a book called The Inside Story of Columbine, Lies, Cover-Ups, Ballistics, Lessons. And you can find that book on Amazon.com. We'll be right back with more of Randy Brown right after these messages. And now a word from our sponsors.
A flooded home or business is never easy to deal with. You're left with a mess to clean up, having to deal with the insurance company to pay for the damages, not to mention the memories that are lost that you cannot replace. And Aquadam can be another tool in your arsenal to protect your home or business from the floodwaters, a hurricane storm surge, or the king tides. Give Aquadam a call at 707-764-2119 or look us up online at aquadam.net. We can help. We're also offering 10% off the price to anyone who mentions they heard this ad on the Opperman Report.
If you find yourself in need of legal representation, it can be a very stressful time in your life. In my career, I have dealt with thousands of lawyers, I've dealt with thousands of law firms, and I can confidently recommend to you Keith M. Davidson at kmdlaw.com. Available 24 hours, 7 days a week, just log into kmdlaw.com. That's kmdlaw.com. Or you can call toll-free 833-4-KMD-LAW. That's 833-4-KMD-LAW. Personal injury, wrongful death, STDs, sexual assault, car accidents, they handle it all efficiently and professionally. It doesn't matter how imposing the opposition may be, because the team at kmdlaw.com are battle-tested and fierce. They will not stop until justice prevails. Go to kmdlaw.com or call toll-free 833-4-KMD-LAW. If you're in for the fight of your life, stop screwing around and contact KMD Law.
Before Epstein was the Franklin cover-up, before that, the Finders, and long before that, the Cleveland Street Scandal. Pedogate Primer is a concise intro and overview of a growing child abuse epidemic worldwide. It features shocking instances of institutionalized and organizational pedophilia throughout history. Churches, cults, the world of arts and entertainment, the government, NGOs, charities, and major corporations are all complicit or culprits in many instances. Pedogate Primer delves into material that for many may seem like the stuff of conspiracy theories. For this reason, the book draws on academic resources, declassified documents, and other reliable sources, and steers clear of conjecture. Such shocking true stories need no embellishment.
Hey, if you have something you want to promote, like a business or a website, you've got a big event coming up, consider advertising on the Opperman Report. We have excellent advertising rates for you. We're on KCAA on three different frequencies on AM/FM in California, KSHP, 1400 AM in Nevada, WWPR in Florida, the Tampa Bay area, 1490 AM, and also WWNN, which is on the east coast of Florida, all the way from Miami up to Port Bay, with 175 miles of I-95. The advertising rates are very affordable. Once your ad goes up and we play the show on the podcast and on the YouTube channel, those ads stay up there forever. And then we play repeats every single night of classic Opperman Report shows. And your new ads will be inserted into those repeats that play every single night. So the saturation is incredible, and the rates are very affordable. Contact me at OppermanReport@gmail.com.
It's the Opperman Report. And now, here is investigator Ed Opperman.
Okay, welcome back to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, private investigator Ed Opperman. We're here today with Randy Brown, who's the father of Brooks Brown, who was there at the scene of Columbine, was actually warned by Eric Harris not to go into the school, that something bad was going to happen. If you want to find me, by the way, you go to Opperman Report on Twitter or on Instagram, just at Opperman Report. Mr. Brown, I know you've written an article and you've done a couple of YouTube videos about the cause. You believe the cause of this was bullying and how to deal with that and prevent these cases.
Yes, absolutely. And bullying is such a cheap word. It's people dismiss it immediately because bullying, big deal. Some guy picks on you and you have a little fight or something. Bullying is the wrong word. Humiliation is the word. When you're humiliated, bullied in front of other children, and constantly humiliated, you grow angry. You become resentful of being humiliated. If your boss makes fun of you at work every day, says you're crummy at work, you're not doing your job, if teachers and children at school and they humiliate you, they turn you in for having marijuana in your car, and you know they're drinking all the time, but you get in trouble and they don't.
Finally go to space, and then space rather. And
Sorry,
that was weird. Then, what humiliation creates long term is a state called hypervigilance. Hypervigilance is where everything that happens to you is a sign you're being bullied, and it reinforces the bullying and your anger, and so you become hyper. A girl laughing across the room when you're humiliated in high school is laughing at you. The boys teasing down the hall, they're teasing you. You see other kids being bullied, and that bothers you because you're one of the kids being bullied, and you're never defended. That creates what, and we studied this and we learned this. And we had our own theories, and in reading books about this, there are just a few certain books that really help understand this. I can list those for you then later if you'd like. But Lonnie Athens, in his book, The Creation of Dangerous and Violent Criminals, talks about the process of violentization, where after you become hypervigilant, you start to develop violent behaviors. And you eventually become violent. And that's what humiliation creates. Humiliation creates violence. James Gilligan wrote a book called Violence, where he actually says that humiliation creates violence. So humiliation in these high schools, in a toxic school like Columbine, creates an environment, creates an atmosphere of humiliation, and that creates violence because it creates a need for revenge. These kids, someone like Eric, who's an injustice collector, didn't believe that he should have been bullied and humiliated. He thought he should be equal to everyone else. What a novel concept. And not justifying what he did, but that's what motivated him. He wanted revenge. And it's pretty simple. I'll even simplify it even further. If you want to stop school shootings, you need to take away that need for revenge. And the way you take away that need for revenge is to take away the anger that causes it. And to do that, you have to take away the humiliation that causes the anger. So if you take away the anger, then these kids have no reason to go to school to get revenge. So that's the lesson.
What would you recommend to a parent whose child is being bullied at school, in high school? A young man, 17, 18 years old, old enough, big enough to go into the Marines, but he's being bullied at school. What would a parent do to intercede on that?
Well, first, change schools. Go and complain to the school. Bullying is, what are the two terms you're, I'm drawing a blank here, sorry.
Okay.
when someone
humiliation.
I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank. I wasn't thinking very well. I'm sorry. So my answer to that, you may have to edit that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Is go to the school. That's against the law to be bullying someone. It's physical violence, and the police should be involved, and the school should intervene. And and take videos of it, show that the kid's being bullied, and put it on the Channel 4 news so you can show that it's a toxic school. But whatever you do, defend your child, get them out of that school, get them out of that situation, teach them that high school is short term, that you're going to graduate and be gone, that it's not the end of the world to be bullied or humiliated a little bit in high school. It happens to everyone. And intercede on your child's behalf. Don't just let it go. Just don't say boys are being boys. Don't allow it to happen. But the message really is for the bullied kid. You're being bullied and you want revenge. And so you decide to get revenge and shoot these people and kill these people and take it out in the school. And you have now become the very thing you hate. You become the biggest bully. And that's a decision you make. And let me suggest making another decision. Don't become the thing you hate. Become the thing you love. Become a kind, caring human being. Become the person you love. Become what you want to be. You don't need revenge. You need to get past high school and be happy and find a mate and get a career and find a purpose in life. Revenge is the wrong outlet.
It seems like we've come a long way since Columbine, as far as dealing with harassment and assaults in schools. But do you believe now all the shootings we see today in schools are still the result of bullying?
I think it's a percentage, 80%, 90%. There's no study on it. Certainly there are some people that are mentally ill that see these examples and just carry them out based on the example they've seen on the TV. But almost all of these shootings, if you investigate just a little bit, you'll see where someone says they were bullied or humiliated constantly. We had a shooting up in King Soopers in Colorado a couple months ago, and that boy took Aikido and martial arts classes because he was being bullied. And then that wasn't enough, and he was still bullied, and he couldn't defend himself. That this is what creates the need for revenge, yes. And this is where some of the books that deal with this subject, my book covers it fairly well, I think. But Paul Mohns wrote a book called When a Child Kills. James Gilligan wrote a book called Violence, which is amazing. James Garbarino wrote a book called Lost Boys. And then Lonnie Athens wrote a book called The Creation of Dangerous and Violent Criminals. And even he states that most criminals, humiliation is the basic cause behind violence. So, yes, I think when someone becomes violent, they have a reason for it. And if you track these people, not the very few ones that have serious mentally ill problems, but if you track these people that are just normal people, their mindset is changed by the humiliation to where they want revenge, and that's all they can see. And you need to give them an option, an alternative.
Yeah, another really good book on this topic, and we've had him on the show several times, Donald Jeffries, who wrote a book called Bullyocracy. And he gets great guest and great material. And really, he's passionate about this topic. Should put your
I have
together.
Not read that. I'll get that. Fascinating.
It's barely a year out. Now, we know that they had targeted your son, Brooks, and you went to the police 13 to 17 times. But they must have targeted other kids, too, as well. Did anybody else go to the police about these two?
No, they did not. There's one kid we know that they superglued the locks on the house, the doors of his house, his parents' house.
Yeah.
They set the bushes in fire outside his house. They vandalized his car, and they did not go to the police, even though they knew who it was. There was another lady who was driving her daughter in the car, and one of Eric's friends was in the back seat, and her daughter said, "Mom, I'm really worried about Eric. He's got a hit list, and he's talking about killing people, and he's got a weapon now." And she went, "Well, he's 18. He has, you know, the right to have a weapon." And the kid in the back was one of the ones who had been one of Eric's friends who had broken off, and he knew it was true too, but that woman never went to the police at all either. People did go to the school and complain about the atmosphere and the humiliation and the bullying, but nothing was ever done on that. So that became a black hole of complaints, which just further reinforced the anger that Eric and Dylan felt for being bullied all the time. So, and that was another great question. Incredible.
Well, thank you. Now, what about the other members of the Trenchcoat Mafia? But first of all, how many kids were loosely affiliated with that group? And do you think any of them knew what was being planned?
Well, the truth is that these two kids were not, Eric and Dylan were not part of the Trenchcoat Mafia. That was a group from the year before, and maybe a little bit that year. But Eric and Dylan were a two-man group. They were their own people. They were not involved with the Trenchcoat Mafia, which was just a silly... the Trenchcoat Mafia was formed as a way to fight back from being humiliated by some of the athletes in the school. If I pick on you and you fight back, now I pick on you with two people. Now you have to fight back with two or three people.
All right.
That's what the Trenchcoat Mafia was. It was a group formed to fight back to the athletes, just a few of them that were bullies in the school. Not all the athletes were bullies, of course, but that's what the Trenchcoat Mafia was formed. It shows you the toxic situation at the school where they essentially had to develop semi-gangs to protect themselves. But Eric and Dylan were not really part of that group at all.
What do you think is the biggest myth you'd like to dispel about this case?
Wow. From what we've just covered, I'm not sure I missed anything. A myth. That it was a mutual suicide is kind of ridiculous. Everything I have proves that Eric killed Dylan, but people will not see that because they want this romantic myth that Eric and Dylan went into school and fought for the bullied kids and then committed suicide. They don't want to see that it was Eric and his violence, and Eric didn't care about Dylan. Eric didn't care about anybody. He just wanted revenge. Other than that, that there was no bullying is ridiculous. The school and the police for a long time said there was no bullying. It took another governor in our state, Bill Ritter, to actually commission the Regina Herter Report, H-U-E-R-T-E-R, where a little while after Columbine, she interviewed people to find out if there was bullying and proved, of course, that there was and that it was very serious. But the school had denied it completely up until that point, and even the teachers, many of them still deny it. And many of the people here still say, no, it wasn't bullying. It was just he's crazy. The problem with that is crazy is easy. Fixing our lives, fixing our violence, fixing the bullying atmosphere is not as easy.
In all this, did anyone, either in law enforcement, government, and the school, did anyone lose their job?
District Attorney Dave Thomas was set to be elected to, I'm going to get this, Senator or Congress, I don't remember which it was. And so he, because the secret meetings were exposed during that run, he did not get elected to that, so he's now just an attorney. He's not a district attorney anymore. The worst part about what you just asked me is, many of the people involved in the cover-up who attended the secret meetings received promotions and have never had to talk publicly. One of them is now a judge who was just an attorney and on and on. They've actually, one of the people who attended the secret meeting is currently the sheriff in Jefferson County.
Amazing.
I'm not kidding.
And if 15 people that we know of can get together and conspire together to keep and to change the story, who knows what is a right? You know, how can we trust anything that's come out about this story from the official sources?
If you can't verify it with information that you can verify, everything they say is suspect. I agree.
We've been talking to Randy Brown, his father Brooks Brown, the husband of Judy Brown, and he's written a book called The Inside Story of Columbine, Lies, Cover-Ups, Ballistics, Lessons. His son wrote a book, too, called No Easy Answers, The Truth Behind Death at Columbine. Mr. Brown, thank you so much for your time today. Excellent guest. You ever want to come back? You got something else you want to share with us? Just let me know.
Ed, I don't know how you did that research, but that was one of the best interviews I've ever had. Those were absolutely amazing questions. And we had not talked before this, so I'm just very surprised. Great job on your part, sir.
I really appreciate it. You made my day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night. And now a word from our sponsors. If you find yourself in need of legal representation, it can be a very stressful time in your life. In my career, I have dealt with thousands of lawyers, I've dealt with thousands of law firms, and I can confidently recommend to you Keith M. Davidson at kmdlaw.com. Available 24 hours, 7 days a week, just log into kmdlaw.com. That's kmdlaw.com. Or you can call toll-free 833-4-KMD-LAW. That's 833-4-KMD-LAW. Personal injury, wrongful death, STDs, sexual assault, car accidents, they handle it all efficiently and professionally. It doesn't matter how imposing the opposition may be, because the team at KMDLaw.com are battle-tested and fierce. They will not stop until justice prevails. Go to KMDLaw.com or call toll-free 833-4-KMD-LAW. If you're in for the fight of your life, stop screwing around and contact KMDLaw.
Before Epstein was the Franklin cover-up. Before that, the Finders. And long before that, the Cleveland Street Scandal. Pedogate Primer is a concise intro and overview of a growing child abuse epidemic worldwide. It features shocking instances of institutionalized and organizational pedophilia throughout history. Churches, cults, the world of arts and entertainment, the government, NGOs, charities, and major corporations are all complicit or culprits in many instances. Pedogate Primer delves into material that for many may seem like the stuff of conspiracy theories. For this reason, the book draws on academic resources, declassified documents, and other reliable sources, and steers clear of conjecture. Such shocking true stories need no embellishment.
Thank you so much for listening to the Opperman Report. I want to welcome all our new listeners at WWPR 1490 AM in the Tampa Bay area. We're brand new down here. We're getting a nice warm welcome. We have great advertising opportunities for local sponsors, local businesses, but also international websites and international companies too. We're on our other stations in California, Nevada, Utah, and on the internet worldwide. But down here in Tampa Bay, Florida, we have some great opportunities for you to come in and get very, very affordable advertising rates. Get a hold of me at OppermanReport@gmail.com and we'll cut you a good deal.
A flooded home or business is never easy to deal with. You're left with a mess to clean up, having to deal with the insurance company to pay for the damages, not to mention the memories that are lost that you cannot replace. An Aquadam can be another tool in your arsenal to protect your home or business from the floodwaters, a hurricane storm surge, or the king tides. Give Aquadam a call at 707-764-2119 or look us up online at aquadam.net. We can help. We're also offering 10% off the price to anyone who mentions they heard this ad on the Opperman Report.
Hey guys, if you like the show and you want to show your support, check out the Opperman Report Patreon. You can go there and become a member for $3 a month. We have all the shows that you hear Monday through Friday on AM/FM radio. We have all those shows, but we cut out the ads. So you can hear that content ad-free. There's a $5 section where we put up all the old member section shows are going up over there. And then there's a $10 section where we have brand new content. 8 hours of exclusive content per month goes up there in the $10 section. But listen, I put up a lot of free stuff too. We put up documents, court documents, photographs, announcements. So you should make the Opperman Report Patreon a stop. You should stop there once a day and check out what's going on over there. That's Opperman Report Patreon.